Rollins College. The views and opinions expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WPRK, its management, or employees of Rollins College.
All right, welcome back to Punkonomics. Here on WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio. And we have a full house today. We have a few of Dr. Balick's students, and we're going to get into...
Brought in by the ex-students, even current. Yeah, you're current, right? You were my freshman. No?
There we go.
You know, something. Yeah, you go
first year
and now senior, you see? So they manage, yeah, to get through. That's good. Okay, right. So I was like being all cryptic about you know, what are we going to do? Well, we'll see in a moment. It's foreign policy. What you're like, you want to call ISIS? ISIS is a good snappy name for it. You know, my American Express electronic wallet app kind of hastily changed its name logo recently. That was kind of funny, but nothing funny about war, I suppose, though we have to laugh. Otherwise we start crying. But listen, so here's the story, right? So I've been having with, well, especially with you, Mike, I've been having some arguments, you know, good kind of, you know, rabid arguments, but in the best sense of the word, and I like that. It's been part of my pleasure teaching in a school, especially, you know, people who disagree with me are generally more interesting than people who agree with me.
And for those out there listening, you can call in and join into the discussion at 407-646-2915. So... Right. Don't be afraid.
Yeah, we probably have a big audience, local audience today because of you guys, right? I mean, there's a blog with a lot of stuff that will probably get you all riled up if you read into the blog. And also, this is recording and it will come out as a podcast too sometime next week.
So anything you say may be used against you. No, I'm just joking.
You know, the NSA is listening, as we know well. So listen, you know, I often talk about foreign policy. You know, just launch, just present yourself, start talking. It's punk.
Yeah, let's start by introducing each other here, real quick.
Introduce yourself and tell me what you think.
Well, for starters, my name is Michael.
Hey, Michael.
How are you? From New York City. I am a senior and a current member of the Phi Delta Theta fraternity.
All right.
There you go, Michael.
So a little bit closer.
My name is Andrew. I am also a senior, econ major from Naples, Florida, and I'm in Phi Delta Theta as well.
Hi, my name is Timur. I'm a junior in Rollins College. I'm a member of Phi Delta Theta fraternity, and I'm from Turkey.
Awesome.
So we definitely don't have like Greek diversity in this group. No, it's cool. I mean, you know, that's great. I call upon other fraternities and sororities to come in groups and give me hell. Shoot.
Lead us off?
Yeah, no, you go.
All right, well, to those who are not familiar, the past couple of days, the United States, with a coalition force, has commenced bombing of the ISIS group in Syria, and it's our first time we're in Syria. Our base is out of Qatar. We have support from the UAE, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, but my question to you is, where is this support from Turkey?
See, support from Turkey is... different kind of matter that we have to discuss, because President Erdogan, which is the president of Turkey, said he would be supporting United States in his endeavors if United States was to give him something else in exchange, which is pretty reasonable. And I mean, there's nothing much to say because it's still new, and you say you have a bunch of support from Qatar and Bahrain, but I don't see any of the troops on the ground, other than they're providing you with military base, which they're also charging you, and they're also selling you oil on a premium. And I could probably prove that point with the oil prices on the world. If you look at oil prices on Monday, they were declining 0.5%, while Obama announces that he attacked Syria and oil prices rises. Mm-hmm. So, I feel like support from Turkey will be coming soon, but not in terms of troops on the ground, unless President Erdogan is willing to commit.
Unless there's a good photo op.
Yes.
Let me be right. I mean, yeah. What support? The real support here is to be to be able to say there is a coalition.
See,
right, in a large sense, not in the sense of Turkey, but the other supporters.
I do not agree with the coalition word because they said they were United States. Bush when Bush announced that they were going into Iraq, there was supposed to be a coalition force with Great Britain too. But how many troops did they commit?
Now, Britain actually did a lot of commando stuff.
30,000.
And the French are bombing Iraq quite vigorously now. Mm-hmm. Though, you know what they're doing? They're really just using their new Rafale airplane for photo ops to sell it better because you get really nice, it's a sell brochure.
I mean, what I'm trying to say in here is that there's always a word. The word,
the
coalition.
Buzzword. The buzzword.
Yeah. Right. It's the buzzword because, I mean, let's face it, nobody wants to go into a place that they don't know by themselves. There's always this word coalition, but you do not see it anywhere because at the end of the day, when you read the newspapers, who gets the most hurt?
Yeah, and it's also domestic. Quite frankly, I think the American thing about coalition is because it's more. This is primarily for consumption in America.
And I'm pretty sure that Turkey will be helping United States. In fact, they met in UN Security Council the other day, and President Erdogan was talking to President Obama about how they would be supporting their actions in Syria and Iraq, but. I doubt will be any ground troops on the ground.
You know what, but let's be real here. The only support that anybody is getting is actually the military industrial complex and the filthy rich. Because this whole coalition buzzword, it's a makeup thing, okay? Bottom line is, and, you know, I've been told by, my family who've been to World War II and to Korea is we go in there, with a coalition of helpers, totally obliterate a culture, and then we build Burger Kings and McDonald's, and also get the poor people less than minimum wage. So, bottom line is we're just killing a bunch of people so to profit, you know, major corporations.
See, I mean, at this situation is quite different, though, because
how so?
I'm quite sure Obama did not want to go into Syria. And that's why he has been ignoring the situation that is going on right now. And United States fiscal deficit is declining as well. If you look at the bond prices today, for example, if you own a bond, $100 bond, you have to pay $115. You have to pay, I don't know the exact price, but let's say it's $115. You have to pay $15 to the government to own a bond that is worth $100. So Obama didn't want to go in there. United States fiscal deficit is declining. But United States got dragged into the war.
Well, I don't know about being dragged into war, but you just finished saying it. It's all about economics, somebody else's economics.
I mean, that's definitely what I'm trying to say. I'm saying that United States got dragged into the war. But I also want to correct you on something. When you said, when you were discussing coalition and the World War II, I don't think that's a quite correct reference because I feel like United States should be tanking Russia for.
Oh hell, that's an important.
No, that's important. Yeah. I agree
the
with
Russian
you.
Russia, I mean, America was a support. I mean,
I'm not saying United States didn't do anything. I mean, first of all, they were fighting a war in Pacific, which was quite hard. But the world shouldn't be tanking Stalin at this point.
I agree with you. But my point is that in most wars, just about every single war, it's always been about profit. Bottom line is when you look at it, you know, very few people, usually on the top, are the ones that benefit. The ones on the bottom are usually struggling. I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Sure.
And I'll put it to you even more closely to home. I mean, right now, the educational system here, and Dr. Ballard will agree with this, it's taking a huge plunge. All that money is being sent, you know, to whatever country for whatever reason, okay, sending our kids to go out there and get shot, okay, all that money can go into the infrastructure here in the United States, which is crumbling. It can go into education. It can go into several other things. And bottom line is we poke our nose into everybody else's business, which is why a lot of people, a lot of countries in the world hate us.
My God, you're channeling Ron Paul.
I want
I just think it's an interesting angle.
I want to challenge that point with saying that you say the United States pokes their nose into somebody else's business, which might seem correct if you look at it from outside, but I want to ask all of you here, what's the main floating currency in the world right now? Anybody knows?
The U.S. dollar.
U.S. dollar. Mm-hmm. So United States actually needs to circulate their dollars around the world to keep its currency strong. And you don't want anything happening to a country in Arabia that you are buying oil from, because they are holding on so much foreign currency reserves.
But that's not the case of Syria.
That's not the case of Syria, but the thing is...
I want to challenge you that the United States is deeply involved in the crisis in Syria from day one.
Yes.
From day one. Not directly militarily, indeed, though for some time now,
okay,
much of these groups have been funded through the Gulf states. And in Turkey, of course, and I wanted you at some point to discuss, because being Turkish is so interesting. One of the kind of embarrassing situation is that the real people that are fighting ISIS, if at all successfully, are the Kurds.
Right.
And offshoots of the PKK, which are dissidents.
I want to, in Turkey.
So Turkey finds itself in a bit of a bind here.
Turkey, I don't think they found themselves in a bit of a bind, because if you look at what really happened, we took a bunch of people in their houses, anything to eat, and we gave them shelter and food in Turkey.
Yeah, the mass amounts, right? Yeah. Of the Syrian refugees.
Yeah, we did that. Right. That's first. Second, mm-hmm. Turkey has been providing finances and weapons to Syrian rebels. That's second. Third, Turkey has been raising...
Wait, ISIS? That's the Syrian rebels, no? I'm being a little facetious here, but there are different groups of Syrian rebels. See, and there are no moderates anymore.
Okay, let's define ISIS
they're
first.
Kinda gone.
Let's define ISIS. The way I know it, the way I would define this, ISIS is a group created by leaders who are essentially in Al-Qaeda and want to take control, but they didn't let them take control. And the leader of the ISIS, he had $10 million bounty on his head.
Baghdadi.
But here's the thing. We pretty much put Al-Qaeda together. We sponsored Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, U.S. money. Mm-hmm. Pretty much put them where they're at. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the way I look at it at this point, and
not anymore,
but it's still the same. It's still the same snake.
No, but ISIS was funded significantly through mostly Gulf states with the accord of the United States. All over the world, Libya is a bloodbath completely.
Just like I said before,
jihadis armed by America. It's just not smart, let alone rather criminal.
I do not have a. concrete evidence to like prove it to anybody, but that's why I'm saying United States got dragged into the war.
Yeah, I totally disagree with that. I mean, history has proven that the United States has interfered with the governments in other countries. Okay. In the background.
It's a global empire. Like you said, the world currency is dollars and America is a global empire. One of the things that Mike and me had good arguments over the years is in the sense that what drives me nuts is when people describe Libya as a humanitarian intervention. That's the ugliest two words in the, or, you know, which no, it was take a mild dictator and lead it to the deaths of many, many tens of thousands of people by arming in crazy people and letting them loose. America blocked negotiations in Syria several times in the past few years.
I mean, if one country believes in this saying about the enemy of my enemy is my friend, it's the United States. I mean, Saddam, a perfect good example. We're giving Saddam swords made out of gold, and then all of a sudden, the moment he decides to do something, we go and take him out.
See.
You know, we're fighting against the Russians in Afghanistan or kind of trying to tame them. We fund Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Let's say, if United States wants to be an empire, and there people are out there are neo-imperialists, famously Neil Ferguson, right? Then we can argue about, is it going about that the right way? Possibly, could it even be, can you have an ethical empire that brings forces peace upon these places and kind of bring stability, and maybe you don't like it in the beginning, but you'll see in the long run we will liberate you, to use kind of Bushism and stuff. But then then you can ask whether that was even ever the intention. I mean, when you look at Iraq under Bush, whom I know you like, I mean, on day two, CIA torturers specialized from Latin America opened the, it wasn't bad apples, opened the torture rooms. And Iraq is by far, within a few weeks and today too, worse than it was ever under Saddam Hussein. So I don't think that you can be a good empire. I think maybe in that sense dragged in. If you're going to be an empire, you're going to be forced to maintain that empire. You can't do it nicely.
I'm not a United States citizen, but I love this country because I have friends in this country that I love. Hmm? But what I want to say is I don't find the word empire correct. Hmm. Because the way I think about it, any country acts for the best best interest of their people.
And the best interest for whose people? Our people in the US?
Settle down, Jesse. See, rare.
No, let's open
it's rare.
Yeah,
rare.
That's a false perception that the world has about us.
If United States wants to the way I look at it, if United States wants to preserve its economical power, the dollar as a floating currency. Dollar is a floating currency. He has to police around the world. Mm. Okay? Because if he doesn't do anything, it's either going to be China or Russia, because somebody is going to actually...
I think you give him a little bit too much credit. I think the potential, if we don't destroy ourselves, then America stands to... I mean, you know, China has very significant problems. Europe has very significant problems. I don't see the dollar being replaced so quickly, and potentially that might actually be an untenable cost. You know, the dollar is overvalued. Would it mean that we can import less and have to produce more? Wait a minute. That might not necessarily... Initially, it might kind of suck because the iPhone 6 is going to be more expensive. But given a little bit of time, it could actually regenerate jobs in America. Might not necessarily be a bad thing. So, you know, setting the world on fire to maintain the value of the dollar...
I don't think United States would be able to stand the devaluation of dollar for a week. Mm-hmm. I do not think that.
Why?
Why? Because population in the United States is used to driving cars with 5.0 liter engines, living in million-dollar mansions.
That's the view people have, and you gotta understand something.
The houses, $150,000 houses you guys have here, is so much more expensive in Europe.
Of course, I know well. You know,
the living standards are so much higher.
No, that is so just completely not at all. America's living standards are significantly lower than any other industrial country in the world today. Significantly lower. The life standard, infant mortality, length of life, quality of life, even wages. Because if you count it correctly, now, I mean, again, I'm talking about all of America, not the 1%. I'm comparing to rich world, of course. I'm not comparing, I mean, Turkey has some very developed parts, but of course it has the East. So I'm not comparing to Turkey. I'm comparing to rich Western European countries. So they even don't pay as much taxes as we do anymore. It used to be that in Europe they paid more taxes. But not when you count it correctly. Not income taxes, but income taxes are a small fraction. In America, I pay more taxes than equivalent people, being member of the middle class. So that used to be the case. It used to be the case, but it's no longer the case, let alone, you know, how many tens of thousands of dollars you pay in medical. So all that, I get more money maybe than the professor, but that professor gets much better health care, gets child care, gets a reasonable school for their kids to go to without having to pay for private school. All of those things. They can send their kids to university. While here, only very rich people can send their kids to university or really smart kids that really work hard. So the standard of living, it used to be the case, but it is quickly eroding. And I put to you that significantly due to misallocation of resources.
How about immigration? Because United States, let's say middle class in the United States, is used to living in standards that are higher than what they can afford. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's mainly leverage.
It's mainly leverage. That's mainly lower wages.
It could be mainly lower wages, but what I'm saying is, when you accept that many immigrants in your country, of course your statistical numbers are going to go down. I mean, there's no other.
That's not what I'm talking about.
You cannot keep it up.
America starts from an extremely high point in its peak in the 70s. But the decline started slow, but in the past, 10, 15 years has accelerated significantly. So, by every possible metric, most immigration to America today, either it's at the very top levels where people, have very good opportunities to come. I mean, I came here, for example, for the education system.
Yes.
Because I wanted to work in American universities that I went to graduate school and stayed here. And sometimes, honestly, when I can't pay the bills and I can't find a decent school for my kids and, I can't go on holiday because I have to pay my doctor instead, being member of upper middle class, I wonder if I didn't back the wrong horse, but I haven't given up on America yet. But the most immigration that's part of it is like criticize it, argue about it, fix it. I think it's fixable.
I'm not arguing anything. What I'm saying is, if you look at it from a statistical standpoint, mm-hmm. when you have that kind of an immigration, it's really hard to keep those numbers up.
But which immigrations are we talking about now?
Immigrations from poor countries. Poor countries.
Because you
need.
Why do they come here?
You need cheap labor in the United States.
No,
otherwise, middle class wouldn't be able to afford what they still can afford,
as opposed to outsourcing.
Cheap labor is the reason why the economy is going down the tubes. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of these corporations are basically. For no better word, it's legalized slavehood, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's what it boils down to. Anytime you have a corporation who starts doing, let's say, electronics, quality electronics,
okay,
and all of a sudden, they start getting big and people want the product and all that, right away, boom, another country is making them instead of U.S. workers,
mm-hmm.
okay? So, you're putting people out on the street in the name of capitalism, that's not benefiting everybody.
There are other jobs.
And consequently, these very same people who lose their jobs are taxpayers. So why do the taxpayers like myself have to finance somebody who is not benefiting the country or benefiting its people? Really?
I'll go after my
I'll get all these jobs and going abroad is because they're cheaper wages. Cheaper production costs.
But it affects us here.
Actually lower the minimum wage in America. If you make that, you put more people to work and make it competitive in an international scale.
Now, that's...
I don't agree with that.
I tell you why you can't. Because that means that the Americans will live like Chinese slaves.
Exactly.
See...
Now, let us be clear. I love those words, right? The president loves to say them all the time. Let us be clear. This is the plan. This is what's happening in America. And the Democrats are, if anything, more effective in doing it. They talk the talk, but then they walk the same walk. You can't do it. But wait, you got a bit of a problem here in the economics because you're right. If you accept, for lack of a better word, a global economy, with little restrictions, if you accept the fact that all the wealth and the means of production is in the hand of a small minority in different countries, whether it be China or America or France or whatever, as it is the case, and you sign agreements like NAFTA and such, then indeed you got a problem. You have to equalize everybody in between the countries to some extent. And it fosters the concentration. So all the wealth will inevitably go to a very small minority, and everybody else will be, wage slaves like they are in prison camps in China.
And I can take you back to Theodore Roosevelt.
What do you do about it?
I'm not a Republican, but I definitely have to give credit to Theodore Roosevelt, one of our late presidents. He was a hardcore Republican, but when he saw that the top 1% was basically monopolized into the point where the poor, the middle class was taking a nosedive, he right away changed. He went into a more progressive and decided to make government
himself, probably.
Yeah, he basically made government accountable, the guard of these corporations and keep them in line because they were basically raping the taxpayer, the people that actually made America great.
So Ross Perot was right. Everybody made fun of him.
I didn't say I was for lower minimum wages. And I didn't say that America needed lower minimum wages. In fact, I think if you increase the minimum wage, you will be able to sell more products that you are selling in the domestic market.
And but where's that money going if they're taking all that money elsewhere?
Something else. You think, okay, yeah, you say, we all see that the money is going outside of the United States.
Right.
But it's not only the minimum wage, it's not only the cost of labor that is expensive in the United States. Taxes, electricity cost, like these kind of
the standard of living that yes, has been there is still maintained. It's really eroded expensive. Significantly. Sure. We don't live like prison camps in China. Thank God.
Thank God. But
we're getting there.
Okay.
Well, we're getting there. Yeah.
So let me put this way. They increase not your quite. Minimum. What's the minimum wage? I'm not. What's the
seven
minimum
and
wage
some?
In Florida?
Around 7:30.
Right? Okay, so you increase the minimum wage to $10.
Okay,
and you start making production here. Essentially, your increase didn't really mean anything because everything got so much more expensive.
Okay,
well,
so
if you increase the minimum wage, you're going to look. Many people will be laid off because companies can't afford
it. It's not enough. No, you're absolutely right.
That's what I'm
it's
saying.
It's not enough. I mean, you have to, though, redistribute in some way or another to get back to some kind of balance that allows a capitalist or market system to function, because right now people, you know, don't buy because the money goes, as Jesse was saying, to wealthy people who don't spend. How much can they spend?
Yeah, how much can
They have enough consumption. So I agree that there's a catch here and that we have to deal with. We have to look in the face that they tell us, and especially Democrats too, you know, oh, you must compete with the Chinese. But competing by our low standard of living seems to be an unaccepted solution for American people to take.
The first economics class I took, it was a class in UCLA. And my professor said there are three types of economies. He said agricultural economies, industrial economies, and service economies. And as the time progresses and people, like, for example, people get better at agriculture and the technology improves, it turns to be an industrial economy, because at that time there's more money, there's more profits created. And when
you have to invest. You have to save and invest to build up capital.
Absolutely. Then, when industrial economy develops, it slightly starts turning to a service economy in which you are, in this case, you're outsourcing your industry and you're buying services. So you have to actually send your money outside of the country because you're outsourcing your work.
Can trade. But what do you make that somebody else wants to buy?
The problem is, United States is in service economy right now, and changing it might actually change a lot of things that people might not like, and it might not.
Well, you mean the top may not like.
It's not only top. I mean, you say that, okay, top has a lot of money in the United States, and I agree. It's what's the top 1 or 5% has 70%.
Historically, it's back to the Gilded Age.
Yeah,
roughly.
It's like,
at least, if not worse.
What is it like? Top 1% has top 1 or 5% has 70% of
You know, those are always broad numbers that are hard, but it's back to a different structure.
Teacher, is average salary of a teacher in Turkey, for example, is $500 a month.
Okay, but the cost of living is lower too.
Cost of living is lower too, but it's not that much lower. It's really not that much lower.
You're comparing a country that again, I know it's very different.
What I'm saying is, when you put it on average, because you have been talking about statistics. Yeah. You have been talking about statistics. When you put it on average, America actually looks better.
Well, it's much more developed and wealthy than Turkey, no doubt about it. But in other rich countries in the world, the situation is different.
They don't have to invest in homeland security as you guys have to do.
Well, excellent. You know, let's get back to that. In a sense, I don't think, you know, I'm with Ron Paul on that, you know, that the empire, or remember Buchanan before him, you know. Empire has been a catastrophe for America, and it started with the Truman administration, by the way.
Don't you think it's too late to look back at it now?
If we don't change it, we shall collapse dramatically. The British were empires collapsed dramatically. The British were fortunate enough to be forced into de-imperialization. They didn't really have a choice after World War II. They were broke. And America kind of was there, and they found themselves second fiddle all of a sudden. So in a large sense, the British were fortunate enough to be cut down to size. America faces a much, much more challenging situation in which we have to kind of figure it out for ourselves.
See, there's nothing wrong with looking at history, because history has taught us quite a bit.
Of course, I love history. And when I, you know, think about foreign policy or the politics that are going around the world, see, 1992, Soviet Union dissolves because they cannot afford to keep 15 other republics connected to them.
Among other things, yeah.
Yeah, among mm-hmm. other things.
Well, their economy was a shambles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Their economy was bad, production was lower, and mm-hmm. pretty much it was not working, right? And we could say that Soviet Union was an empire. They were, they were.
Even a little bit.
Yeah, they were racing against the United States.
Yeah,
and they lost because they couldn't afford it.
Their old guard did, you know. No doubt. It wasn't really that much of an empire. I mean, a lot of people worked hard in America to persuade Americans to be afraid of the Russians. That wasn't really
I agree with that too, but how can you even say that it was not an empire? You have 15 other countries working for you, essentially.
True, not exactly, quite frankly. I mean, first of all, like you said, it's World War II heritage here. Yeah.
Okay.
There was, and both countries, I mean, America and the Russia, jumped all over it, of the spheres of influence. You could as much say that, Poland was an imperial fief of the Soviet Union in the early days. As you could say that France was the imperial fief of the United States, or England, or Western Germany, for that matter. It was a sphere of influence game.
My point is...
And the Russians got a lot of credit for being the only other game in town, where they weren't really the other game in town, they just were the only one, you know, as opposed to America.
My point was, what I was trying to get at is that Russian Empire dissolved in 1992. But you're looking at Russia.
It wasn't an empire. It was the country. No, the economic system collapsed. I mean,
But the thing is, how it was not an empire? They had armies in 15 other countries. They were exploiting the economies of 15 other countries. They were exploiting the people, labor force of 15 other countries.
Sure, sure.
And you say it's not an empire?
Well, to a point. I mean, a lot of those countries were,
If they are not an empire, I don't think the United States is an empire, because the only thing the United States has abroad is the military.
Yes, no. United States is big. I mean, come on. I mean, I hate to. I mean,
no, I won't hear it.
All over the planet, countries are clients of the United States.
Okay.
All conflicts in the world since World War II are pretty much started and supported.
Okay.
We've become like President George Bush. I know you like him. Mm-hmm. Honestly said, you know, addicted to this. We've become just like Rome. In a sense, we're no longer producing. We're no longer innovating. All we can do is grab resources. Cheap material. We're devolving back from the high skill industrial powerhouse of the post-World War era, back into the plantation capitalism of the 19th century. And it is at our peril because, you know, people are suffering in America already, very low standard of living, hunger, you know, while at the same, our political liberties will be eroded when you don't have a middle class. When you go back to a third world country, a distribution of income, lo and behold, the wonderful liberties and freedoms we enjoy as a sophisticated, a country with a big middle class, disappear.
But I still couldn't finish my point. Well, I will say, you firstly don't agree with me that Soviet Union was an empire.
Yeah.
But if you don't agree with me on that, I don't know how can you say that the United States is an empire, but...
A different kind.
But
yeah.
What I'm saying
kind.
Is, humankind loves power. Human loves power. Humankind loves... Human nature loves power. And when Soviet Union collapsed, the way I look at it, I mean, I didn't make any deep analysis on it, but the way I look at it now, Putin is trying to gain some of the controls that Soviet Union lost. Georgia, for example, Abkhazia region.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fight in 2008.
Sure.
Why? Because Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili wanted to take the territories that was given to him back. Mm-hmm. And now Ukraine. Kazakhstan is almost under control of Russia.
Well, why not?
Yeah, why? That's what I'm saying. When you lose that power,
you give it up voluntarily. Wait, Russia gave up
as part of its collapse, gave up the countries of the East. It could have sent the Red Army back. It would have been a very stupid of them. But at the time, they had reform. Gorbachev, who deserves a very significant credit there, wanted to reform. And those... Or since the 50s, there were people in Russia that were pushing that direction. They just lost every time. They didn't, the old guard, the militaristic, maybe imperial. You know what? I'm going with you. Maybe the imperial side of the Russian leadership won every time. But when Gorbachev got into power, he agreed voluntarily to allow all of those countries that were direct connected to them to leave.
Why?
And by the way, the agreement, the obvious agreement was, of course, that they do not immediately join a military alliance against Russia. Yes? Which they slowly but surely did. Now, Yeltsin was not only a fool of a drunk, he was a puppet of NATO. That's the real problem with Yeltsin, and he betrayed his country in many ways. Now, I do not want to defend Putin because he's an autocrat and he's a jerk. But when it comes to Ukraine, there was a legitimate government. It was a horrible government. But the one before and the one now is worse, or at least just as bad, corrupt and everything, with the distinction that now Ukraine is kind of run with a significant proportion of outright neo-Nazis who celebrate their collaboration with the Nazis during World War II. We forgot our history, but the Russians haven't, maybe because what you just said, that they lost, 26 million people in that war. So for them, they remember who was on their side and who was on Hitler's side. So you have some legitimate opposition to the government, and good for them, in Ukraine, just like you had in Libya, just like you had in Syria. But instead... And I say we, I mean the West, because of course the European secret services are all together in the same bed with the CIA. It's not all the CIA all by itself, yes? Engineer a crisis, right? And are pushing Putin to a corner where politically, again, domestically, maybe you're right that Obama doesn't want to get into Syria, but he is. Just like that, Putin, whether he wants or not, he has to. He cannot fold up and crawl up in a ball and cry. It's unacceptable for him politically. He can't. You have a European violent takeover with neo-Nazis, to give it nice flavor, taking over the Ukraine. Yeah, massacring its civilians in the East. You know, he's got to do something a little bit. You know, he's in a corner. And I think that we may have, intentionally or not, kind of put him in that corner, and it's not healthy for anybody, certainly not for the Russian people or the American people, but it's really good for, well, weapons merchant.
Going back to our favorite buzzword here, humanitarian intervention is what you're making it seem like in the Ukraine. But where does that stop? Mm. Does that stop in Crimea? Does it stop in Georgia? What happens when it reaches the NATO countries of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia?
See, Dr. Balak, Dr. Balak made a good point.
But who says no? Just because of NATO?
It would be insane for him to do that.
Because of NATO.
Yeah, but Dr. No. Balak made a good point. He said when Soviet Union dissolved, Yeltsin let him go, they promised that they signed an agreement, I think, that they wouldn't be joining NATO.
He violated it on day one.
And the thing is, they didn't even have the power to sign such an agreement because you have America on the other side of the world, and they essentially signed an agreement with the United States that United States wouldn't expand NATO to Baltic countries, which United States essentially violated. And I agree with you on that. But what I point out is that, see, they say in finance that it's a zero-sum game. There's a winner, there's a loser, but there's always people who are riding the ship. They just hop onto the ship.
They say that? Who says that?
That
the market economy, Adam Smith, free markets is all about escaping zero-sum game. That's the whole point.
Do you think it works?
Well, it does. It's a delicate bird.
Yes.
If you get, you know, and for now I'm putting, you know, if you manage to get a well-balanced capitalist system, sometimes you can manage to eke out, that's the brilliance of the free market system, in so much as an ideal, because you never achieve a free market system. But if you push down the elites, if you stop the monopolies, if you cut down the wealthy to size a little bit, if you transfer to the talent in among the poor and give power to the middle class who are stabilizing the bourgeoisie, kind of stabilize the, don't want extremes, don't want foreign adventures because their kids die there, and they're not the ones making money. They stabilize everything. They need a good education. They want good jobs. It's all of those things that are kind of synonymous with the ideal, at least, of a free market system. Then you get gains from trade, you know, and how they are shared, of course, is an important matter. But it was the first time in history. That's why the Scottish Enlightenment and the European Enlightenment, that's the claim for fame, as far as I'm concerned, and the market system, is that it actually happened. You reinvest the profits not in cocaine and prostitutes, but in better machinery and technology and better skilled labor. You build your businesses, you come up with better product, and that's kind of what it's about. Then there's the environment, but okay, let's put that aside for a moment.
And in idea, in theory.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so let's now look at it, how it works. There are winners, there are losers, and there are people who benefit from the winners, and they just hop on the ship and ride on their profits. See, but when you generalize it to the politics, there are winners, there are losers, and there are countries who are riding with the winner.
But that's mercantilism. You know, that was supposed to have been, like, yes, since Adam Smith, we kind of were supposed to imagine another world.
See,
I'm not saying it's perfect, but there was, I mean, there is such a thing as a you know, voluntary beneficial exchange, you know? I can't believe I'm sitting here. I'm usually the one kind of challenging that the free market system doesn't work well. Here I am defending it. I mean, I love it. I mean, you know, we need another show like this. We'll never be able to even start dealing with it. And poor Mike's like, you know, biting at the, so you better just jump in.
So Mike, you have a couple questions, so you wanted to say something.
Yeah. Go a little.
No, man. Where do you even begin? Well, I want to talk about the current escalating situation in the Middle East and America's role with ISIS. Where do we stand? What are your thoughts, Professor Balak? That's what I want to hear.
I have a question for you, though, before we get into that. Did you agree with the Gulf War?
Absolutely.
Which one?
Both of them?
Absolutely.
Both of them?
Yes.
Okay. I just was curious.
What's there to... What can be said for the... I mean, the first one, I don't know, neither really. I mean, you know, war is extremely expensive.
They violated the sovereignty of Kuwait. It was
we violated a lot of sovereignty.
We kind of, frankly, who doesn't? You know, I mean, I remember how they're all like, oh, Saddam violated too. You know how many UN resolutions Israel violates?
Sure.
Palestine violates them as well.
Not really.
Hamas does.
Barely.
Barely. Violate sovereign rights, you may have you, but when you violate American interests, that's when America gets involved. So now we're actually, I kind of got carried away,
but one of the things that I liked about you, despite, you know, the fact that you're kind of a raging imperialist, you know, I know, he's the kind of guy who says thank you, you know, I like him, that's why I like him.
You're getting it from both sides,
humanitarian intervention, we're talking, you know, no, this is about imperial interests, and that's important that we have that discussion. Potentially, we should be having discussions about cost benefits, you know? So, but too many people are now talking about, oh, we must do something to help the people in Syria. You know, how about get your jackboot off the back of their heads? You know, that'll be a good start. And same with Iraq. I mean, did we benefit from this? I mean, maintaining, of course, that was the war it was about. People say it was about oil. It wasn't exactly about oil. You're absolutely right. It was about the dollar, about trading the oil with dollar. But that was understood before the war, but it was sold to the American public with the fake weapons of mass destruction, which was completely kind of fabricated silliness. And only South Park did a good job at criticizing this when they had Saddam be the abusive boyfriend of the devil. That was good. That was really good, you know. So I don't know. So we separate the pretend humanitarian reasons of a white man's burden, quite frankly, as the Kipling poem, where America should now replace Britain and, you know, to rule the world because the only country, you know, maybe, you know, is it even possible a humanitarian empire or a stabilizing empire? Maybe for a while it is. I'm willing to entertain that, but was it in the interest? Let's separate the noble causes that I think mostly are fake public relations. with actual interest. Did America benefit? When I say America, which Americans, of course, is a major issue here too.
If you look at the current situation, I do not think America benefited from it. America wanted. I do not even think America wanted it in the first place. World War One. World War One happened, and when United States was going to join the war, I think it was Wilson agreements that it was saying that you cannot dissolve any country that has lost. So in that sense, they couldn't. They were not allowed. European countries.
Because rules are made to be broken. Yes.
European countries weren't allowed to dissolve what? German Empire, Austrian Empire, and
they bled it instead.
Ottoman Empire, right? But they still dissolved it. And they divided into different countries, fake borders.
And as usual.
Then Second World War happens. United States is selling weapons to Great Britain, and United States just gets dragged into the war by Japan. What I'm trying to say in here is that I do not think United States wanted that in the first place. Europe started it. And
Americans
after
used to
World
be
war,
right. Yeah, very isolationist, yes, they call it, right?
Yeah. After Second World War, it just ended up in hands of the United States. And when you were in the Cold War with Russia, you had to gain influence of different countries, and that's where it's coming from. But the main reason, I think the main reason about what's going on right now is the artificial borders that was established after World War One.
Oh, okay, yeah, imperial heritage, got you,
A little bit of a counterpoint. Edmund Burke said the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. I believe that it is the United States' burden as a global hegemon to take care of these issues because we have the means, we have the ways of doing it. And I think it is a burden of the American people. It is, as you said, the white man's burden. But it is a task that we must undertake.
But I pose to you,
these people must be rid of.
What would we say if the shoe was on the other foot?
She was not on the other foot.
No,
well,
but
that's complicated.
But what if? But what if? What if you lived in one of those countries and you had your own lifestyle, your own culture, and let's say another country came in and we're like, well, we don't like the way you operate. This is the new order now. What would you say?
My lifestyle, my culture would be in jeopardy from these evils, these groups, these
killers.
Yeah,
but it's
these
not.
Radicals.
I mean, I hear you. You know, right now, yeah. I mean, the world. You know, if I could press a button and the leadership of ISIS would all like disappear, and I might be seriously considering that button, despite some reservations. The thing is, what are we doing? We're arming even more messed up people with even more weapons to attack them. I challenge the idea that we are seriously engaged, even in a bona fide, in good faith kind of empire, you know, this brave empire you describe. I mean, in that sense, you're an imperialist. I mean, I get you. I mean, you know, people should read, you know, I even assigned it to students at some point, you know, Neil Ferguson about it, you know, but he's also constantly basically criticizing America and saying, but you're not doing it. And then when pressed, and I don't agree with most of what he has to say, by the way, but it's interesting and relevant. He often gets pressed and saying, but neither was the British Empire. It was a pretty evil empire. You know, I put to you, I think that all empires are necessarily evil. And if they're not to start with, even with the best intention, when you dominate people by power, your economic model becomes that of rape and pillage, essentially. You see, you always, how did, like the Romans, it brought down all empires, and they turned from wonderful Romans too, you know, had wonderful things going for them, and it turned bad for their enemies, of course, initially, even if many of their enemies were innocents. You know, those, what happened to Iraqis? Does Iraqis do anything to you?
No, but the same.
You killed millions of them. You brought a genocide upon them. The Gulf War. What for?
So power brings this genocide.
And before America came, it was Saddam doing it to them with our blessing. So and before they invaded Kuwait, who gave them the green light? Who tricked them into doing it because it was a way of life? So that's why you need that middle class, or not just all classes, discussing this and calling our politicians on it and saying, wait a minute, why are you playing this grandiose game? We're the ones who have to give both treasure and blood, so stop it. It's in the long run counterproductive for everybody. There must be another way of doing it, you know? So now we have a monsters over there, but even now, finally, I'll shut up, but, you know, good luck with that. You will lose this war. like every other war since World War II.
That's for correct.
America has lost every single engagement. Why? Because America changed in World War II. Since the Truman administration, America fundamentally changed its economic model. It then became an empire. And I, you know, every war has been lost. I mean, I'm not talking about sending some Marines to blow up a Granada for a while. I mean, okay, whatever. This is like police. That's just police brutality in some sense. It's not a war. But, you know, Vietnam and everything, that's a game, you know.
Korea.
I don't know. One, look at Korea.
Also, every
South
war
is doing pretty well right now.
That's a wonderful example. They were supposed to be like cheap manufacturing, kind of like, you know, sweatshop. And they were. And they had an American installed vicious dictator. Maybe not vicious enough, because the Koreans themselves rose up against him with mass demonstrations, you know, not with, I mean, they were communist, many of the students that fought, the South Korean, I'm talking South Korean, but they weren't like North Korean, you know, that's a junta, you know, it's a military organization, it's not whatever. Anyway, I'm saying South Korea fought for its independence internally and got to be a capitalist kind of, you know, kind of somewhat socialistic in many ways. I mean, hybrid, like most capitalisms that are successful, like Germany in a large sense. And developed very successfully through central government. Actually, one of the few cases in which central government did a good job in South Korea in history. But you see what I'm saying? It was supposed to be our boy. As if, like, Vietnam hadn't completely collapsed, but would have stayed north and south. And we'd maintain control of the South, which was a puppet, an imperialist puppet. The French lost one. We wanted it after. And did it do well for America?
No.
It's a catastrophe. I mean, the economy had been, actually, that was the major reason why, ever since we'd be like, you know.
I just want to,
I don't just don't think it's smart. It's not good for America.
I want to go back to the point that Michael made. He said, if you have the means, you have to intervene. But I feel like the only reason we are having this argument right now is because America actually doesn't have the financial means to engage in such actions.
We can blow the world.
But even if it did, what are you going to do?
Over.
What do you do?
I mean, they don't need any more money. We can do it. The problem is it justified?
But the thing
got
is,
enough bombs, yeah.
When you say planes, you should intervene when you have the means, I do not. I personally do not believe that United States government should do that because they don't have the financial support.
They shouldn't do it on moral grounds. Taken.
Well, wait. Let's put the moral aside for a second. Put the moral aside. So you can't afford it, and that's a valid point. The way we run it, we're doing it all over the world all the time. I mean, we have multiple wars. People don't even talk about the wars we're involved in Africa, you know. I mean, it's like not even on the news yet. That's after we're done with this one. Maybe it'll come up on the news. And I agree with our time, man. We will do this again. I mean, so because we kind of got into a meat of a, you know, if it's there's the ethical issue. There's how is it smart to do it, and if it is smart to do it, how to do it. So you're like now going there, which is an important place to go, where maybe we can't afford it. I would put to you that even if we could afford it, there's no military solution here. I mean, you can't. You blow this group to be
another.
Okay.
No.
But who could fix it? The UN can't do anything.
The beheading of Americans, the pillage,
there are other ways.
That is going on.
The strategy. I'm challenging the strategy.
In the 90s, the former Yugoslavia. Just genocides going on. Many people died. NATO fixed it. NATO had to come in because the UN couldn't fix it.
Didn't fix much.
And NATO is led by us. We did most of the fighting.
Okay, folks. I gotta cut it because otherwise I'll get my head chopped off.
We have to cut. That's true. But hey, you know, I mean, if you're up for it, I'm the vote. Next time I got somebody next week. But maybe the week after, let's do a whole 2 hours and like, you know,
because we have been jumping around.
Sometimes it's not a bad thing. Maybe we motivated our public and next time we'll try and organize it better. Our time is up.
Yep,
I'm getting like
up.
Evil faces here. So thank you very much.
There we go.
We'll definitely
You've been listening
again.
To Punkonomics here on WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio.
The preceding program did not reflect the views or opinions of the station, its management, or employees.
This is Ralph Nader. You should listen to WPRK, it's the voice of the students. It'll give you a bigger framework.
This is Oliver Stone. Thank you for listening to WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. There's no profit in this form of media. Enjoy it while it's still free form.